Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. At over 1,200 miles in length, the Columbia River is the lifeblood of the Pacific Northwest and one of the most important rivers in the world. It's the fourth largest river by volume in North America, draining an area the size of France, 259,000 square miles. The Columbia River watershed extends from the Canadian Rockies in British Columbia to the Pacific Ocean near Astoria, Oregon. It drains portions of seven states and British Columbia. Columbia Riverkeeper is the leading public interest group working to protect the Columbia. With offices in Portland and Hood River, Oregon, the 501c3 nonprofit organization's mission is to protect and restore the water quality of the Columbia River and all life connected to it, from the headwaters to the Pacific Ocean. They work in river communities protecting the people, fish, and wildlife that depend on the Columbia River. Today, my guest is Dan Sears. He is the conservation director for Columbia Riverkeeper, and we have him here on the phone. He is in Portland at his office. Good morning, Dan. Are you there?
Good morning, Donna. I am here.
Excellent. And I think we have a good connection, so that's wonderful. Before we begin to talk about Columbia Riverkeeper and what you all have done in the past and what things are happening now and things we need to think about for the future, which affect the Columbia River, let's talk a little bit about Dan Sears. Please tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Yeah, I was born and raised in Oregon City, Oregon. So I'm from Oregon.
You're fifth generation Oregonian, I read.
Yeah, we go back quite a ways. Really developed at a young age a connection to the Columbia River and its tributaries, you know, particularly the Willamette and the Clackamas growing up in Oregon City. With my older brothers, spent a lot of time fishing and hiking and learning about some of the natural history of the area and also some of the threats to the places where I like to fish and to hike and the places where we got our drinking water, you know, like the Bull Run Reservoir in Portland and, you know, the Willamette and the Clackamas and river communities around the Portland area. So they really instilled in me, my parents and my older siblings, kind of this interest and this care in the river systems all around us. And so that's part of what brought me into working with Columbia Riverkeeper. And I was really lucky at a time in my life when I was very interested in liquefied natural gas issues to basically run into Brent Foster and Brett Vandenhoevel and the other members of the Riverkeeper team at that time, and was really happy to become part of the effort, the successful effort around that issue.
Well, Dan, for our listeners, I'm going to tell them a little something that I found fascinating about you that I read online too, because not only were you the lead organizer in the successful campaign to protect forests and farmlands from Bradwood liquefied gas, you are an expert on the impact of energy projects on water quality and communities, which includes LNG, coal export terminals, and power plants. You're a member of the Hanford Advisory Board, where you speak as a public voice, demanding faster and more robust cleanup. Thank you for that. And also, I think people would find it interesting that your background is in earth science, systems science, and that you received a BS and MS from Stanford University. So you have the scientific goods, and you also have the passion for water and for rivers. So you hooked up with Columbia Riverkeeper, and your role there is to work with communities up and down the river to let them know about Columbia Riverkeeper's mission. So maybe we should talk about Columbia Riverkeeper itself now.
Sure. Yeah, so Columbia Riverkeeper has over 3,000 members and supporters, and you can think of it as sort of a network of people all throughout the river system, all the way up into Canada, who are working with to try to keep an eye on different issues in the Columbia River to protect and restore the Columbia. And there's a lot of different ways that Riverkeeper does that work. We have a network of water quality monitors all up and down the Columbia who routinely go out, you know, every month, get water samples and establish sort of a baseline for the river's health. And one of the things that many people know in Astoria in the lower river is that the river, the temperature of the river is very, very important for returning salmon, for keeping salmon coming back. And so that's one of the key things we monitor on a yearly basis, is looking at that temperature data and seeing just how warm the river's getting and trying to find ways to make sure that there is adequate habitat and adequate water quality for salmon to return, as they're doing right now. So that's one of our big programs. In other areas, you know, we work to try to protect really sensitive areas of the lower Columbia River, places like Bradwood, where we successfully stopped the proposed liquefied natural gas facility, and other places like the Skipanon Peninsula, where another LNG terminal is proposed. And so a lot of that work involves really relying on people who are listening to your show, the people who live in Astoria and the lower Columbia River and Warrenton, to get engaged. And it's funny because you brought up my background, my educational academic background, and I have to say I've learned much more since working, you know, for River Keeper and with people in the community about what really goes on in the river system. And it's been quite an education since 2005 or so, when I really got engaged on these issues, to find out just how knowledgeable people are who live in the lower Columbia River, in Astoria and Warrenton, and how engaged they are in fostering the restoration of the Columbia River system. It's heartening, because Columbia River Keeper really relies on that vast network of people to be engaged, to be watching, and to be pushing for the solutions that will keep salmon coming back.
To know where we live, to have a connection to place, and to care for that place, those are the vital things that make up, you know, what you are looking to local people who live on the river, along the river, near the river, in the communities, who care about it, to give you information. Because you're right, that's something that they know from living every day in that area, rather than just in a classroom, of course.
Right. Sort of like committees of correspondence up and down the river. You know, in the Revolutionary War, how they would send folks with horses up and down the river. I'm sort of the horse. So my daily work, you know, sort of, you'll find me somewhere, you know, between the Tri-Cities and Astoria, in my car, going to a meeting or going to a hearing or submitting testimony and talking with people and capturing the stories and the knowledge that exists to try to find ways to keep the Columbia River as clean, as fishable, as swimmable, as drinkable as we can.
And I think, Dan, you know, in today's world, everyone's so busy that perhaps they don't realize the threats that are happening. Just, you know, there's so much information coming at us all the time. And so you're, you know, driving and going to meetings and essentially, you know, raising the alarm, like Paul Revere, or saying, you know, these things can be happening, and perhaps you aren't aware of it, even though some of us who even live here are not aware of some of the things that happen. Columbia River Keeper has been very successful in the past. I mean, that was a huge victory. It was a David Goliath kind of victory when the Bradwood LNG terminal was defeated, and Columbia River Keeper played a huge role in that. So I'm sure it's been gratifying to see the successes that Columbia River Keeper has had, and the support that you're getting, not only from legislators, but from, you know, people not only in the Northwest and in other parts of the world who realize how precious this area is and the Columbia River. And now there are, I think you said, three important threats that you are working on right now.
Yeah, and, you know, and the successes on the Columbia have been many, and it's not just stopping something like Bradwood. It's, you know, getting the state to establish very high restrictions on the amount of toxic pollution that polluters can dump in the river. And that was work that Riverkeeper did with a whole host of other interest groups. So there are a lot of really positive things happening on the Columbia. Before I get into the kind of the threat matrix here of the different fossil fuel projects on the river, I do want to just say that, you know, the work that people are doing in their communities to make sure that you know, the river is staying clean is really important, and it's having real results. You know, we're seeing less toxic pollution come in from many places in the river than we used to, and that's a direct result of people being committed to that work. But with that said, there are a host of huge fossil fuel companies who would love to turn the Columbia River from the lower Columbia from being sort of a linchpin for salmon recovery into a superhighway for fossil fuels, taking liquefied natural gas, which many people are familiar with, or oil, crude oil, and particularly coal, dirty coal, down the Columbia River and shipping it all over the world. And so we've been very engaged with many of the communities, you know, in Longview and Columbia County, Oregon, and down in Clatsop County, trying to make sure that people know the stakes for what's proposed for the Lower Columbia River right now. It's a blessing and a curse to have these huge projects proposed for the Lower Columbia, because while it's certainly a nuisance to have these huge, dirty fossil fuel projects proposed, it's also a great opportunity to actually have an impact with our activism and to set a much lower carbon path for our region than we've had in the past.
Well, it is amazing the power of grassroots organization and of people who really do come together, even though sometimes you would think, well, these giant corporations, there's no way to stop them. And but you've proven that there are ways to say, no, this isn't the right thing to do for this river. And we have the scientific facts to back it up. And then people are engaged. So before we talk about the projects that you're working on right now, I want to also let listeners know, how can people find out more information about Columbia Riverkeeper? Why don't we give your website so that people can go onto that and become a member and learn more about all the things that you're doing?
Absolutely. Our website is ColumbiaRiverkeeper.org. And, you know, you'll find a ton of information there about these different issues. And one of the really hot topics on the front of our website right now is the big proposed coal export terminal. So on our website, you can find out how to support our work. You can also just find information about upcoming hearings and events, and you know, things like, we just did a hike on the Skipanon Peninsula this weekend. So when those things in the local community are coming up, it's a good place to go and check in and see how to get engaged.
And Dan, how many people are on work with Columbia Riverkeeper as staff members?
Oh, as staff, we have 8 staff members currently. So we're a small but very effective group.
Powerful. I know. I mean, people know about Columbia Riverkeeper, and you have, as you say, you have connections all up and down the river. You have advocates and people who are giving you information, which is what's so important and vital. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today, I'm speaking with Dan Sears. He is the conservation director for Columbia Riverkeeper. Columbia Riverkeeper is the leading public interest group working to protect the Columbia River from the headwaters to right here in Astoria, Oregon, the where we go right into the Pacific Ocean. And Dan has been talking about, we've been talking about what Columbia Riverkeeper is, what they do. And you're, I know you're funded by your 501c3, so you're funded by grants, you're funded by memberships. And you are not only looking at, we're looking at what Columbia Riverkeeper has done in the past, the successes that you've had, and now we're looking at what you're engaged in. So let's talk about the 3 things that are the most important that are on your plate, because you are right there on the front line. So what are the things that are on your mind right now, Dan?
Yeah, I'll start with something that's been in the news a lot lately, which is coal exports. So there are several companies looking to push basically to dig up coal out of Montana and North Dakota, to take it by rail all the way down the Columbia River, and then to put it on ocean-going ships and ship that coal overseas to Asian markets. You know, the proposal has been very controversial. It's, agencies looking at these proposals have received thousands and thousands of comments already. But it's really coming to a head in the next couple months. And one of the big things that we're focused on right now is getting people informed and engaged in the proposal to ship coal through Longview. So in Longview, Washington, a company called Amber Energy is partnering with Arch Coal, one of the biggest coal companies in the world, to ship up to 44 million tons of coal per year through Longview. The site is just downstream from the Weyerhaeuser site, as you know, for people who are listening who are familiar with the area, and it's the former Reynolds Aluminum site. So at 44 million tons of coal per year, it would be the largest coal terminal in the United States. And that would require up to 8 full coal trains a day coming into Longview and 8 empty trains leaving Longview, which would snarl local traffic, pollute the air, and deliver coal to be stored in a huge 75-acre open coal pile right next to the Columbia River. So for a myriad of reasons, We are very, very concerned about this project and have been fighting it for years. This proposal was initially laid out as a 5.7 million ton coal terminal, and it was a challenge by Columbia Riverkeeper and our partners that exposed the full scale of the project. So initially they tried to convince everyone that they were going to build a much smaller project, and it was through our legal challenge that we discovered, and the great work from Earth Justice, our law firm at the time, that uncovered this big bait and switch, which is a kind of a common theme with the fossil fuel industry on the Columbia River, as people know. So the really important thing that's happening upcoming is a September 17th hearing to decide what set of issues will be considered by the Department of Ecology and the Army Corps of Engineers in Calhoun County when they write their environmental impact statement for this huge proposed coal facility. And I really encourage everyone who's listening to participate in that process, whether it's in writing or whether it's showing up at the hearing and making your concerns known, because we're really pushing these agencies to take a big look at how this facility will impact not just the immediate vicinity of Longview, but the entire Columbia River estuary and people downstream. And part of that analysis has to include looking at other projects in the neighborhood that are proposed at the same time, because the cumulative impact is much greater than any individual project.
I think that's always been an issue, is that when these agencies, government agencies, are looking at projects, they look at them on an individual basis, when really you're looking at the entire river and you do have to look at them in a cumulative way. How are they all going to impact? You have to have the big picture view, which is what you all are doing. And so on September 17th in Longview at the Cowles Expo Center, that's where the hearing will be, Dan?
That's correct. And the hearing begins at 5 p.m., but at 4 p.m., the doors open, and there'll be a rally outside. And if you're new to the issue, it's a great chance to come and meet people who have been working on this for several years to get up to speed on what's proposed in Longview. I really encourage folks to come. It's a great way to get educated about the coal export issue in two-minute snippets, because they're allowing two-minute testimony times, which I think, you know, for anyone who's ever attended a FERC hearing, it's even shorter than that. So we really encourage folks to go. And one of the things I brought up there is that, you know, we're asking them to look at the entire river system and to assess really the full impact on the Columbia River, from coal that could be spilled into the Columbia to the ships coming up and down the river. One of the things that really surprised me was, if you add up the proposed coal export facility, the proposed LNG export facility in Warrenton, and other proposed fossil fuels facilities on the Columbia River, just these proposals alone to ship fossil fuels overseas would roughly double the deep draft traffic on the lower Columbia River. So it's something that we think the agencies really need to consider, is whether or not the future of the lower Columbia and the Columbia River estuary is kind of a nursery for salmon and the linchpin for salmon recovery, or whether it really is just going to be kind of one fossil fuel tanker after another going down the river.
I think that's a great way to put it, because that's how we have to look at it. It is the only estuary in the Columbia River. This is the estuary. We are in the estuary, which is a very rare, biologically rich and diverse part of the river. It's crucial to the salmon. And I agree with you that, you know, is it going to continue to be the estuary as it needs to be, or is it going to now become a fossil fuel highway? And so the Longview coal terminal is one thing that I know is Columbia Riverkeeper is working on, and that's the hearing on September 17th. And one of the things you also mentioned is how people from all different walks of life come together, whether it's fishermen, housewives, farmers, ranchers, teachers, you know, everyone, because people have a stake in the river and in their communities and in quality of life. And I think that everyone is beginning to start to say, we have to look at the big picture here. The other thing that I hear sometimes, Dan, is that a lot of people in the estuary area think, oh, LNG is over because the Bradwood LNG project was defeated, and they don't realize that Oregon LNG is still going on. Why don't you give us a little update on Oregon LNG, which is in Warrenton? So now we know about the coal terminal hearing, Longview, the proposed coal terminal, September 17th. Let's move to Oregon LNG for a moment.
Yeah, Oregon LNG is no stranger to many people in the Lower Columbia River. They have been pushing a project since 2004 to build some type of LNG terminal in Warrenton. The really important switch happened just over a year ago when Oregon LNG finally admitted that they would rather export natural gas. And this natural gas would come from Canada and from the Rocky Mountains, a lot of it from fracking, hydraulic fracturing, which is a controversial polluting practice. And so they would take this gas, super cool it at negative 260 degrees Fahrenheit, and ship it overseas in some of the largest tankers in the world. Their proposed terminal is right on the east side of the Skipanon Peninsula. So where the Skipanon River meets the Columbia, that's essentially where they would propose this massive fossil fuel export terminal. Oregon LNG is not going away. In fact, they are increasingly persistent in their efforts to get approval from both state and federal agencies. What's really important is that we expect there to be important hearings coming up in September and October for people to come and to show your opposition or at least your concern about the Oregon LNG project. It's fundamentally a different project now than it was at the beginning, because what they're talking about doing is taking the gas and exporting it rather than bringing in liquefied natural gas from overseas. And so that would involve, you know, obviously opening up our gas reserves to very high-priced overseas markets. And there's a lot of concern within the region that this will have the impact of actually increasing natural gas prices by building this project. Oregon LNG's proposal also involves a very large pipeline, a 36-inch diameter, non-odorized, high-pressure pipeline that would go up over a very rugged section of Clatsop County up to Lewis and Clark River drainage up towards Elsey, and then it veers to Columbia County and would go into Washington State, crossing the Columbia River near Columbia City, Oregon. So there are a lot of reasons to be concerned about Oregon LNG, and one of them is the company's approach to local land use, which is basically at this point arguing that they don't need the approval of Clatsop County to move forward. They're arguing that local authority should be preempted by federal law, and we strongly disagree with that. And so far, the state of Oregon has also stood behind Clatsop County and also disagrees with that. So we expect a final hearing to be coming up soon for Clatsop County commissioners to make a decision on the Oregon LNG project, and that's a very, very important decision point. And it's something that's a culmination of an enormous amount of hearings and organizing and work by people in the Lower Columbia River, the great people who are members of Columbia Pacific Common Sense, the local activist group that has been really, really engaged in this process from the very beginning.
It's really interesting how a lot of these giant global corporations look at rural areas and think that they can come in and just, buy everything and do whatever they wish without local people being involved. And so thank you for being the voice and for helping with the organization on that. And so we will look forward to hearing more about hearings on Oregon LNG happening in September and October in Astoria or Warrenton. And we just have a few minutes left, Dan, and I think you wanted to talk a little bit about the oil exports as well.
Yeah, I just touched on this very briefly, just to round out the fossil fuel trifecta. You've got this huge coal export proposal in Longview, this massive natural gas export facility in on the Skipanon Peninsula in Warrenton. And then just recently we learned about a new proposal to ship crude oil out of the Port of Vancouver in Washington. That very quickly drew a lot of attention. And one of the things it did is brought together local labor leaders. The ILWU in Vancouver spoke out against the terminal, a very big prominent business in Vancouver spoke out against it. And it's one of those things where you, like in the LNG context, where we had farmers and fishermen and bloggers and tree huggers and everyone sort of agreeing on something, we're seeing that consensus emerge in Vancouver that shipping a huge volume of oil through that port is really a bad idea. To give you a sense for the scale of what's proposed in Vancouver, they're talking about 380,000 barrels a day. That's roughly half the size of the Keystone XL pipeline, one of the largest and most controversial projects in North America. It, you know, combusting that oil alone would be over 12 million cars worth of greenhouse gas emissions. So one of the things that I really liked that came up, that came out of this oil issue, and it's come out of LNG and coal, is the idea that our geography is our destiny. It's something that Bill McKibben said, who's been really active with 350.org, when he came to the Lower Columbia River and went out on the river and saw some of these proposed terminal sites. And you know, he said, you guys are at a choke point. You have a great opportunity here to make a difference in the health of the Columbia River and the health of the planet in the long term. And so I'm inspired by what I've seen and the activism from people in the Lower Columbia River, and I'm sure it's going to continue.
Absolutely.
And going forward.
We just have a few moments left, Dan, and again, I think we should give information about how people can find out about how to become a member of Columbia Riverkeeper. And it is exciting and inspiring to be part of this, to stand up for protection of the water quality, for the wildlife, for the people of the Columbia River. And Columbia Riverkeeper has been battling this, and you all are on the front lines, and you need everyone behind you to say we support clean air, clean water, and we want everyone to be able to live in a way that is healthy along the Columbia River. So let's let people know again how they can reach you, Dan.
Sure. You can find our information at ColumbiaRiverKeeper.org. If you're specifically interested in the coal issue, we have information there. You can also find more at powerpastcoal.org. So there's plenty of information online for you to dig into and to get engaged with us. And you can find out how to be a member or to come to a meeting that's coming up soon and learn more about our work. Or hopefully we'll be hiking again soon on the Skipanon Peninsula. It was a beautiful trip out there this weekend. And you know, there's a lot of different ways to participate in protecting and restoring the Columbia River.
Yes, and Dan, you know, Dr. David Suzuki said, you know, every human has to have clean air, clean water, and clean food. And so who can be against that? And so it's so interesting when a corporate entity makes a decision which would destroy clean air, clean water, and clean food. And so thank you for standing up for clean air, clean water, and clean food, because as humans, that's what we all need, even members of corporations. They're humans too. So hopefully the light will shine and people will be inspired. People will join Columbia Riverkeeper, find out what you're doing, and be engaged in this very important project of protecting the Columbia River. Thank you so much, Dan Sears.
Thank you, Donna.
So we've been speaking with Dan Sears, Conservation Director of Columbia Riverkeeper, and you can find out more information at ColumbiaRiverKeeper.org. Thank you, Terry Wilson, for making this phone patch possible and for being the extraordinary engineer you always are. And I also want to extend my appreciation to local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. With gratitude for all the good things in your life, focus on those good things, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here right now in this moment, the only moment which exists, on the amazing planet we call Earth.